You know, the English word meditation merely means to think. To think. You got to meditate to think. But that's not exactly all the Hebrew words or Greek words when we talk about meditation. For instance, in the Psalm 5 and verse 1, you know, to the chief musician upon Nehaloth, a psalm of David, and he goes like this: "Give ear to my words, O eternal, consider my meditation." The word here for meditation in the Hebrew and also in the Syriac language, is there, you know, they're cognates very close, means consider my murmurings. Consider my, in some cases, illusions. Consider my faint utterance, a faint utterance. Now that kind of goes along with what we see in the book of Romans chapter 8, where the Bible says in the same way, this is Romans 8 verse 26, same way the Spirit also helps our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we should, but the Spirit itself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. Groanings, utterances, murmurs. And in verse 39, Romans 8, verse 39, my heart was hot with, this is Psalm 5, verse 39. My heart was hot within me while I was musing, the fire burned, then I spoke with my tongue. While I was musing. These words have to do with, you know, you're trying to talk about God's law or think about God's way and your musings. Just something that's in you expressing the things to God or expressing things in your own mind. Take a look at Psalm 19, verse 14. You remember this phrase? This is such a famous verse. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, be pleasing in your sight, O eternal, my rock and my redeemer. Now here we have this word. And you have also a statement in Psalm 92 having to do with resounding music, something sounding, like a groan, an urge, a statement that you sometimes will talk to God and it'll be like you're musing or you're groaning, and has to do with some feelings that you have toward God as well. Here's Psalm 119. It's, you're talked about verse 14, the meditation, like in Psalm 19, verse 14, may the meditation of my heart. Oh, how love I thy law, 119, verse 97. It is my meditation all the day. Now, when you think about meditation, you're going to say, well, how do you meditate on God's law all the day? Do you just recite it? Do you just say, okay, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt, you know, honor your father and mother, you shall have no other gods before me, you should not make graven image. What do you say? How do you meditate upon God's law? So let's take a look at that word again. It's my testimony. You know, there was the Ark of the Testimony. You remember? It is my testimony. Your testimonies are my meditation. Psalm 119, verse 99. Your testimonies are my meditation. Now, the Hebrew word here has to do with a thoughtful contemplation. But it's even more than that when we look further into the Hebrew word. Let's take a look at Psalm 1, verse 2. It says, you know, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, but his delight is in the law of the eternal, and in that law does he meditate day and night. Do you think about the law? Is that what you do day and night? You just think, well, okay, I'm going to recite all the law. Is that what you do all day and all night? The Hebrew word here has to do with, again, to moan, growl, utter, muse, meditate. It also implies to devise, to plot, to imagine. Now, if I'm If I'm meditating on God's law, and I'm going to think about how I want to live God's law, I want to plot. You know, John Wilkes Booth plotted. He imagined, he mused upon a plot, devised a plan in order to kill Abraham Lincoln. He devised it. He plotted it. People plot. You have to plot, imagine, and devise a plan in which you are observing, following, walking, doing the law of God. You're doing it. But you're doing it up here first. Now, I don't know if any of you ever, there was a book that came out many years ago. Psycho-Cybernetics was called. Psycho-Cybernetics, how you can change your life through imaginings and meditation. And one of the stories in the book was about a guy who was in prison for years. And while he was in prison, he used to be a golfer before he got in prison. But in prison, with nothing to do, lying around, nothing, you know, he had nothing to do but many hours in his cell. What he did was he would imagine going to the golf course. He knew this particular golf course that he played. He knew every hole in it. And he would imagine stepping up to that golf course, putting the tee in the ground, putting his golf ball on the tee, having his club in his hand, and he would imagine seeing the ball, and he would imagine his hands and his body turning and hitting the ball, and he would see the ball go sailing out. Then he would imagine the next shot and the next shot. He would play the whole course up in his head. And they said after he got out of prison, he went to the golf course, and he shot. From having never played for years and years in prison, when he got out, he went to the golf course and shot a phenomenal record, close to some of his best scores before he ever went to prison. Now they said, well, how did he do that? He ran neurologically. You see, every behavior that you have, there's a set of neurons in your brain that allows you to do that behavior. Allows you to do that performance. Whether it's combing your hair, you can imagine. I want you to just take your hands. Just look at your hands for a second. Just look at your hands. Now you can imagine a baby's hands. Look at yours. How much have these hands learned to do since you were born? Think about it. At one time, they could not hold a pencil. At one time, they could not comb your hair. At one time, they did not know how to hold a hairdryer, a pencil, a computer. They couldn't type. They couldn't write. They didn't know how to use a pair of scissors. At one time, they couldn't do. And your hands have learned so many things. So many things, artful things. You talk about a surgeon or a dental technician or a dentist, and how much those hands in your brain, and they've all learned it because you have neurons in your brain that's learned to do it. How much have you learned that you're able to do with your hands today? You catch a ball, you hold a pencil, you don't even, you know, where you, how you pick up your cups and how you do that, how you do dishes, how you put something away, how you feel in the dark for something, and you know when you feel it. All the things that you do with your hands, how many things have you learned to do with your hands? Well, through the imaginings, you imagine, you amuse upon it, you plot, you... Now, here's the same word, the Hebrew word, here in Psalm chapter 2, verse 1. Why are the nations in an uproar, and the peoples devising a vain thing? The Hebrew word devising. Devising. Same like the word to plot, to meditate. I delight in the law of the Lord, and in it I plot, meditate, imagine all day and night. So what is meditation? In Psalm 38 and verse 12, I'll just read a few of these. They also seek after my life, and they lay snares for me, and they seek my hurt. They speak mischievous things and imagine, same Hebrew word, deceits all day long. They imagine deceits. You can imagine the law of God, plot, devise, and imagine, or you can plot, devise, and imagine deceits. Here in Psalm 38, he says they imagine deceits all day long. Let me read that in another translation, chapter 38. I read it in the King James. Now I'm going to read it in the New American Standard. Those who seek my life lay snares for me, and those who seek to injure me have threatened destruction. They devise, same Hebrew word, treachery all day long. They devise it. If you devise something, you think it through, you make a plan, you plot it out, you imagine it all getting fulfilled, you imagine it being done. Here's another one, Proverbs 24, verse 2. For their minds devise violence. We devise and plot and imagine on the law of God. Well, what do their minds devise? Violence. And their lips talk of trouble. So here's the word, same word. Let's take a look at it. I'm going to read it in various translations. This is Psalm 35, verse 28. And my tongue shall speak of your righteousness. Now, I want to read this in different translations because the King James says speak, but that's not the whole thing here. Then my tongue shall recount your justice, declare your praise all the day long. Let me read that in another translation. My tongue shall declare your righteousness and praise, and your praise all day long. And in Psalm 37:30, the mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue declares justice, or speaks of it, imagines it. Okay, so when you want to do God's law, let's say you have a, you know, you have a problem. Let's say you say, well, I don't want to be a gossip. I don't want to do this. You now need to say, think in terms of doing a good thing in place of doing the bad thing. Okay? You need to think in terms of doing a good thing. If you imagine the law of God, I imagine doing righteousness. Doing righteousness. Now, here's how some people do. They imagine not doing wickedness. Don't try to do that. Imagine doing righteousness. Because it's very difficult for your mind to pull away from not doing something. Okay, let me say. All right, right now I do not want you, okay, do not think of a pink elephant. All right? Do not think of that, okay? Right? Don't think of it. Don't think of a whole group of pink elephants holding, you know, one trunk on the tail and the other trunk. Do not think of that, okay? All right? Now, as I say do not do that, there's only one way for your brain to figure that out. First, it has to imagine it, right? And then it has to say, I'm not supposed to imagine it. You see what I'm... But what have you already done? You've already imagined it. You see what I'm saying? So here's how people used to pray to overcome certain difficulties. Oh, Lord, help me not to smoke today. Okay? Help me not to smoke today. Help me to stay away from those little white cylindrical cigarettes. I know they taste good, but help me not to have them. Help me to not put them in my mouth and puff on them. Help me not to do this. And they just pray and pray and pray and pray. And then they leave. They get up from their prayer room, and the first thing they do is they head right for a cigarette pack, and it's in their mouth. They strike the cigarette, and they're puffing right. Within moments after they prayed. Why? Because the way they prayed and the way they imagined, they actually imagined doing it. They devised the entire plan in their mind prior to going out and doing it. You see what I'm talking about? Am I getting through to you? You're imagining doing it, even though you're saying, help me not to do it. Help me not to think of pink elephants. Help me not to think of cigarettes. Well, that's exactly what you're going to be doing, because you have to think of it first. So what you have to do is you have to think in terms of doing right. I want to think right. I'm going to think of being gracious. I'm going to think of being loving and kind. I'm going to think of saying good things to people. I'm going to think of passing on some praises, some good information. You know, rather than I'm going to try not to gossip about this person's personal life. don't do that. Think in terms of passing on praises. What can I see that's good in this person? What can I see that's right? What can I do that's right? You have to imagine and plot that, devise that. Take a look at Psalm 15, verse 28. Oh, this is Proverbs. Proverbs 15, verse 28. The heart of the righteous studies to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Now, that's the King James Version. Let me read that in the New Jerusalem Bible Version. The heart of the upright reflects before answering. The mouth of the wicked spews out wickedness. So the heart, the mind, the being of the righteous person thinks about it before they start saying it. Thinks about what this is going to do, how this is going to hurt, how this is going to help. What can I say it? How can I say it? People have often asked me, you know, when you speak, you give sermons, don't you? Yeah, of course I've given sermons. Yeah. Well, what do you think about before you give a sermon? Well, I prepare it, generally. You know, I have to study, you know. And I study, I prepare, and I got my stuff. And some people say, you know, I knew one minister in Worldwide. He said, I never prepare. I just get up and I just start talking, whatever God tells me to say. But it was the same sermon every time. He just gave the same thing. It was always the same thing. Because he never studied anything. Because it was always the same sermon. 3.5 hours of the same sermon. And but the point of it is, he never thought, he never planned. But when I do it, I study, I prepare, I get the scriptures, I try to organize them into a logical sequence, and then I imagine myself giving that sermon. When I pray about it, I'm imagining giving that sermon. I'm imagining myself doing it, and doing it, you know, well and feeling confident. I'm imagining myself being friendly and helpful and loving the audience from the pulpit. I imagine myself doing that before I ever do it. Okay? So listen to Proverbs 15, verse 28. The heart of the upright reflects before answering, but the mouth of the wicked spews out wickedness. Okay? Reflects. Isaiah 59, verse 13, uses this phrase. Transgressing and denying the eternal and turning away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt. But listen to this last part of this verse. Conceiving in and uttering from the heart lying words. Conceiving in. They've got them. A conception of these lying words, and then they go ahead and utter them. They go ahead and utter them. So if you want to imagine, if you want to meditate on God's law, you pick an action of God's law. You pick a way of behaving in God's law. Okay? And you picture yourself doing right. For instance, there's a law that goes like this. You shall not curse a deaf man. Okay. Deaf man walks by and you curse him because he can't hear you. So you can say all kinds of ugly things. Cursing means you just make fun of him. You talk about him. It doesn't mean you have to swear, use swear words. But it means you dope, you jerk, you know, you're just stupid, you're just dumb. You know, and you say it behind the person's back because, number one, he can't hear you, right? Since he's not looking at you, he can't hear you. So you can get away. The law of God forbids that. Forbids that. So how do you, if you want to do the law of God, how do you imagine that? You have to imagine, I have sympathy and care and love for the deaf man. I have sympathy, care, and love for the deaf man. I would never say something hateful. I will say only good things about this deaf man who walks with. And the other thing is, you're never to put a stumbling block in front of the blind or, you know, trip him up because he can't see. You never do that. So how do you imagine doing righteous? I would help a blind man. I would say, sir, be careful where you're walking here. Do you need help? And he's got a cane, he's walking. Not only would I never put something in front, I will help the blind man walk appropriately and properly and safely. So you're imagining doing the right, not just not doing the wrong. You follow what I'm saying? If you do that, that's the way to meditate on the law of God. Here's a scripture in 1 Timothy. Now, this is directed toward elders, ministers in the church, but it's a very interesting scripture, and it has a cognate in other places of the New Testament. I'm going to read 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 15. I'm reading it first in the New International Bible. It goes like this. Be diligent in these things, in these matters. Now, if you'll remember 1 Timothy chapter 4, he's talking to Timothy about a whole list of things that Timothy should do and in his ministry. The whole list of things. And in 1 Timothy chapter 4, let's turn there, and in verse, a little before that, he talks about verse 15. Until I come, he says, give attention to public speaking of the scriptures, how you read the scriptures, to exhortation and to teaching. Do not neglect the spiritual gift which is in you, bestowed on you through the prophetic utterance with the laying on of hands. And previously he talks about other things. You know, we labor and strive because we have fixed our hope on the living God. And he's giving Timothy all these instructions. Now in verse 15, he says, I'm reading now, I'm going to read from several translations. He says in verse 15 from the New International Bible, be diligent in these matters. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Take a look at verse 15 in the New International Version. Be diligent in these matters. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Here's the New Jerusalem Bible. Let this be your care and your occupation. You're throwing yourself into this. Let it be your care and your occupation, and everyone will be able to see your progress. Revised Standard Version. Practice these duties. Devote yourself to them. Now, what we have is, when it talks about being diligent and giving yourself to them, it's a Greek word that means this. To work with something definite in mind, to take care, to endeavor. Another definition of it is to improve by care or study or practice, to cultivate it, to take the pains to do it. You're going to improve it because you're going to practice it. You're going to take pains with it. You're going to cultivate it. And here's a third definition of this Greek word. To fix one's mind on something. To think about it. To meditate upon it. So what he's telling Timothy is, fix your mind on these things I'm telling you. Meditate upon it. Take care about it. Put it into practice. Repeat it. Take pains with it. Cultivate it so that your progress will be seen. That's the Greek word here. You are putting so much attention to this that you're going to bring this into be a part of you. A part of you. Now, most people don't know this. And I don't know if I mentioned it here. I've finally got the courage to mention a few of these things. But, you know, for years I didn't want to say it because it's so embarrassing. But when I was embarrassing at the time. When I took classes in speech at Ambassador, I gave my second year college. We had and Garner Ted Armstrong was our speech teacher. And he had asked each of us to give what is called a meaningful speech to you. We're supposed to do a meaningful speech. Okay, I'm going to give a meaningful speech. I had just taken my first airplane flight. I thought, oh, this big airplane, well, all these bags, all these people, you know. And that, in those days, it was propeller only, propeller flight, you know. But I had taken my first airplane flight. And so I went and looked up aerodynamics and, you know, the power of the air and the way those wings are formed. And, you know, the wings are formed so that the air passing over the wing is faster than the air passing under the wing so that you get a lift, you know. You see how that comes up? I'm blowing on top of it, but watch it come up. You see that? I'm not blowing under it. I'm blowing on top of it. But the air passing over it creates a vacuum, and the air up under it lifts it up. That's aerodynamics. So here I am, and I'm giving this talk about aerodynamics and, you know, how God's law and all these marvelous things that God's put into the world that men have discovered, and we can use it to do things and fly higher than the birds and faster than, you know, not a speeding bullet, but yeah, even faster than a speeding bullet. And you leap tall buildings with a single bound, all that kind of stuff. So here we are. But I'm giving this talk, and everybody in the class is laughing. They're turning to one another, and they're laughing. And I'm talking, and I'm trying to, and they are laughing at me. And I couldn't get them to stop. And after I got done, they gave me an evaluation, different ones, you know, and they were loud. Well, I think he should have had more gestures, or he should have had more eye contact. At the end of the class, Ted Armstrong hands me a slip of paper. Just a little small slip. It said, David, I knew that you were serious. Try to put your finger on just what it is that makes your audience laugh when you don't want them to. I thought, what could that be? What would it be that makes them laugh? So I went to a man who was an older man. He was a married man, and I went to Al Portoon. Some of you may have heard of a guy by the name of Al Portoon. Al Portoon was there in the same class. So I went to him, and I said, hey, Al, why were you guys all laughing at me, you know, laughing during my speech? He said, well, because you're funny. I said, what do you mean I'm funny? He said, well, you walk funny. I said, I walk funny. He said, yeah. He said, when you get up, you don't just get up and walk. You kind of walk. You amble up to the thing. You walk rock back and forth. And he said, and when you get up there, you kind of go back and forth like this. I said, I do? He said, yeah. And he said, you walk like an old Pennsylvania farmer walking through the cow patch. I said, I do? He said, yeah. He said, and you talk funny. I said, I talk funny? He said, yeah, you talk funny. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you never say any of your ings. You don't say going, thinking, doing. You say going, thinking, doing. And you never say any of your ths. I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't say them or those. You say them and those. I said, I do. He said, yeah, you say them, those. You're going, doing, thinking. With them. We're going with them. And I said, I do? He said, yes. Well, it's like, you know, oh, no. And he said, but it's, he said, so it sounds funny. You know, you're talking, you don't say any of your ings and you don't say any of your ths. And so I thought, oh, no, man, this is terrible. You know, what am I going to do? And he said, and you don't pronounce your O's right. I said, I don't. He said, you say O, O. I said, I do? He said, yeah, that's, I said, that. I couldn't even hear it, you know. And he said, you don't say O, you say O, O. I said, I do? He said, yes. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I started. Theophilus Thistle, the thistle sifter, sifted a sieve of unsifted thistles. Those, them, that. With them. I have to go with them, with those. Those, these, those, them. I had to, you know, going, doing, going with those, going with them. I practiced over and over and over and over. I did my tongue twisters, the TH tongue twisters, over and over and over and over. I practiced getting up from my seat quickly, walking up and standing straight, and saying, good afternoon, everyone. I practiced it over and over and over and over. And the next time I spoke, people didn't laugh, except when I told a joke or wanted them to. They listened, and they didn't laugh. I was the same guy. I was the same brain, same me, was the same person with the same background, with the same whatever I had, I was the same person, but I changed all those mannerisms. I worked and I worked and I worked at it until I changed the mannerisms. I got rid of the Pennsylvania accent. Go, do, oh, go, not go, go, you know. And I worked and worked and worked my tongue twisters. I worked it until I changed that. And in a short time, people didn't laugh anymore, except when I wanted them to. So, again, devote yourself. Practice these duties. Devote yourself to them. You devote yourself and you practice it. It means to fix your mind on it, to meditate on it, to think about it, to practice it. And in my mind, when I thought about stepping up to the podium, I thought exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up quickly. I'm going to walk up directly. I'm not going to just, you know, amble up. I'm going to walk up quickly and stand erect and talk to the people immediately. I could hear my own voice saying, good afternoon, everyone. Then I started speaking. And I could hear myself saying the these, those, them, thou. And I would remember practicing it. And then I would imagine doing it when I got up in front of the class. Devote yourself to it. Now, that's premeditation. You're premeditating. You're practicing it. You've got it in mind what you're going to do, not what you're not going to do. So I didn't think in terms of, oh, I'm not going to say this. I'm thinking of what I am going to say and how I am going to say it. So take a look now. The same Greek word, which means to work with something, to find it, to practice it, to give yourself to it, to take pains with it, to meditate on it, which is used in 1 Timothy.